Hi, I'm the Dark Tangent, and you're about to listen to some speeches from DEFCON 2, held at the Sahara Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1994, July 22nd to the 24th. This speech and all speeches are copywritten, the Dark Tangent and DEFCON Communications, all rights reserved, except permission is granted for educational nonprofit use. Now, the Sahara, like most other hotels DEFCON's been at, has since been blown up to make way for a bigger and better hotel. So with that in mind, sit back, relax, get ready for some good speeches.
Hi there. Well, I basically wanted to sort of field a few questions you may have about the UK. I wanted to also let everybody know, Annalisa mentioned that the fact that there's fairly few access to the internet in the UK at the moment. She mentioned that Demon.com, they're one of the only internet servers available at the moment. They're not exactly cheap either. They're maybe sort of $40 a month you have to pay for access to that. Previously to that last year, there wasn't really any access. A couple in the UK, a group called UKC runs the internet access for the UK. They're University of Kent. And previously we were trying to get an internet link set up for public domain stuff and people just to use it, but they wanted somewhere in the region of $450 a month just per site. It hasn't really been easy to get anything set up, so everything in the UK tends to be fairly close together and fairly low key. People tend to stick themselves. We really need to get some more communication going between the UK and the US to promote this sort of thing. In the UK, it's nowhere near as sort of high level. The media don't really report it too much. I suppose in the last year, there's been maybe two large cases. Some of you may have heard about the 8LGM, 8-legged groove machine. There are three guys involved in that, Pad, 1D, and Gandalf. Pad and Gandalf, they were all three were busted, mainly for hacking into university systems and various other computers. All three were busted, but Pad and Gandalf admitted they'd done it, and basically within a month or two they were just sent down, and I think they're currently still serving time. I think they got a... Have they been let out? Oh, right, that's quite cool. But the big thing was the first person to be prosecuted under the Computer Misuse Act in the UK was Paul Bedworth, he's 1D. I used to know him a couple of years back. I didn't really speak to him before this happened. But you probably all heard on the news that he, when it all got to court, he basically pleaded that he was addicted to hacking. He got a psychologist to stand up in court as an expert witness to say, oh, this guy's addicted to hacking, he can't stop himself. It's an illness, you lock him away, it's not going to cure him. And there's a massive media wrangle over this and lots of publicity, and after a couple of months, a jury decided, well, yeah, okay, he's addicted to hacking, he's not guilty. He got off, the police threw a fit, they refused to speak to the media afterwards. It was really embarrassing for them, and consequently the UK government are now planning to tighten up the laws even more. As the laws stand at the moment, accessing a computer illegally, just logging into a computer, just trying a name and a password, if you get caught doing that, they can send you away for 5 years. If you're proven to destroy data maliciously or hacking for a purpose, I think the maximum penalty is 15 years. Similar penalties exist for virus writing. If you're caught writing viruses, I believe it's also even if it's just for personal use. But if you're caught writing viruses and they do any damage, they're going to put you away if they catch you. And again, the maximum penalties, I think, 15 years. There's actually been a guy caught in the UK the week before I came out here, so it's 2 weeks ago now. He wrote the SMEG virus. You may have heard of it. I haven't seen it myself. I don't think it does much damage. It's based around Red Dwarf, which is a TV show in the UK, science fiction show. Basically, as far as I'm aware, what happens when it activates itself, it comes up with a message, smoke me a kipper, I'll be back for breakfast. this was not sort of taken too lightly by, well, it was taken fairly lightly by the media, but people sort of didn't take too much notice about it until it popped up on a couple of government systems. That was fairly embarrassing for them, and it also popped up on a couple of military systems where it shouldn't have had access to the outside world, so they were a little embarrassed about it. So they went all out to get the guy. I've forgotten the guy's name, but they actually caught him 2 weeks ago. He lives down in Cornwall, in the UK. And last week I read a memo from the Ministry of Defence, which basically states they're looking for any activity in this virus across any of their nets or computers, and if they find any, basically document everything that's happened and any damage that's done, send it to them. We also put out press releases that if anybody has any information, if it's just damaged their own personal files or just wiped anything at all, come forward. So they've got more throw at this guy so they can basically lock him away and never let him out, which is not altogether too good. They're planning to tighten the laws up even further since the Paul Bedworth case. Previously to the Computer Misuse Act, the only thing they could really get you on was theft of service, theft of telephone service, theft of electricity, and maybe criminal damage if you did actually damage anything. They want to tighten up further. They want to increase the minimum sentence, I think, to 8 years. They're really trying to frighten people into just not even attempting to do anything. They're just trying to stamp on people now. But this is going to be going through fairly soon. But I mean, I'm not entirely sure on what else they intend to do. The next big thing in the UK at the moment, I suppose, is really cellular hacking. I've come over here and noticed there's quite a lot of cellular stuff going on here. There's a major problem with cellular fraud in the UK at the moment. There's basically two networks, two analog networks in the UK. One's run by Vodafone, one's run by Cellnex. They cover 98% of the population, and something around 2 million people own cellular telephones. In London alone, they reckon there's 14,000 cell phones being stolen each month. It's got to the point now that you see the guys washing car windows at the traffic lights, when you stop at traffic lights and traffic jam. Well, they've sort of moved on from there to breaking your window and grabbing your phone. And these phones are now either going to the criminals, or the majority of them, we think, are being exported to places like Hong Kong and into China, where they also use the tax system. They use amps over here, but it's a similar system, just runs on slightly different frequencies. With all these phones being stolen, there's quite a lot of interest in cellular fraud and so on in the UK. Various modifications exist with phones, allowing you to ESM and mini pairs through keypads. Reprogramming equipment is available. There's a newspaper in London called Loot, a fairly good name, seeing as sort of 90% of the stolen stuff in London gets sold through there. You can open it up and there's about 4 to 5 pages just of cell phones in there every day. It's a daily publication. I know there's a guy in Scotland Yard, I'd rather not say his name, but he's working on an operation to cut down on cellular fraud, and he says something around 90% of the adverts in there, they're all stolen. So it's fairly easy to get hold of a phone illegally. It's fairly easy to get hold of ESN and min pairs illegally. Lots of modifications exist for these phones, as I say, from entering ESN and min pairs in the keypad to reprogramming. Reprogramming software is freely available as well. The latest thing in the UK is there's a unit in the UK called Mitsubishi MT6. I forget which model it corresponds to in the US, but it is available over here. It's a transportable. But the UK version in software has various quite neat features. If you can access the technical menus on the phone and get into programming mode, it allows various features. It's a 2-watt transmitter, but if you get into the maintenance menus, you can bump that up to 10 watts. which is fairly powerful. I don't think I'd like to have to aim near any part of my body when it's transmitting. Also, the other features it has on it is, for about £50, you can buy a small card that plugs in, which gives you a phone jack. You can plug in any equipment then into that. And then if you bump it up to 10 watts, obviously, you're not going to have any problems with transmission errors, which is quite nice. We've managed to get 14 port connections over that reliably every time, which is okay. It also allows you to reprogram ESN and MIMPES through the keypad as a standard feature, although I'd like to meet some of the technicians who wrote the software for this, they've got to have a good attitude. Another good feature of it is there's a panic facility which you can either hardwire to switch or through access to the keypad. This reverses the polarity on the board and blows the chips. You can just watch them blow in a pattern around the board and just wipes any evidence of tampering off it at all. And so that's quite good if you get busted. But the really exciting bit we've just discovered on it allows you to read the reverse control channel, but the phone actually reads and decodes the reverse control channels, which allows you to pick ESN and MIMPES from the air as you're making the phone call. So the latest modification that's just come out is you set the phone up, just scan for an ESN MIM pair, that jumps up, you can either split on the keypad on there, and then you use that for that phone call, and then your next phone call you scan again, pick another pair, and you're straight onto that again. So it's 100% reliability for calls. As long as you're in sort of fairly populated area, and there's plenty of ESN and MIM pairs floating around, you're going to be guaranteed phone calls anywhere in the world, any time of the day or night. Which that's quite handy. As far as anything else goes, cellular telephones really taken off in the UK now. As mentioned, 2 million customers just on the analog networks. There are two other networks, there's two digital networks, GSM, which basically they work all over Europe and UK. It's spreading, there's mainly in Germany at the moment, that's a really good coverage there. Areas of France, the main routes up and down France, Austria just opened theirs, parts of Scandinavia have it as well, Portugal has it, Spain's getting theirs set up now as well as Belgium. It's a digital network that runs at 900 megahertz, and it allows you, it supports 9600 data as a standard. Which is going to be quite nice when that gets off the ground. The other two networks at the moment, there's one called Mercury 1-to-1, which is just London-based. It's PCN, Telescope Communication Network, running at 1.8 gigahertz, digital standard as well. They've gone for the, to get it off the ground, they've gone for the idea of making all local calls free after peak hours. In the UK, I mean, you may or may not be aware, in the UK you have to pay for all calls. Anyway, there are no local calls free, and it's also not particularly cheap to call in the UK. In peak time, you may pay $40 an hour to go long distance. I don't know how that compares to the US, but it seems fairly expensive to me. So they've gone for the facility of occupying free local calls. So when this started off, the network only covered London and not altogether too well. They had a fairly large rush, and after about 2 weeks they'd sold 14,000 units. Unfortunately they had capacity for around 3,000. So after about a month of network being on air, you buy a phone and it may take you 2 hours to get a line to make a call, which sort of backfired. So they've been saying, it's been running now getting on for a year, they've been saying that they're going to be sort of spreading out of London, and they hope to cover sort of maybe 30% of the south of England by the end of this year. However, they've been spending something in the region of, maybe 1.2 billion trying to get the network set up correctly, but they've had to cut half of their budget just to improve the coverage in London to cover free local calls. The other network available at the moment is another PCN network called Orange. Why they went for that name, I don't know. It's a 1.8 gigahertz, again, digital. This time it covers 50% of the country. They intend to go 70% by the end of this year, 90% by the end of next year. It's probably the most promising network yet. It's not free local calls. However, you pay your monthly rental for the line. You buy the phone, you pay monthly rental for the line, and that includes a certain amount of airtime in the package. So if you don't go with that airtime, you don't have to pay anything for your calls. 0800 numbers and such are free on it, which they weren't previously on any other network other than the Mercury one-to-one network. It also gives provision for what's called SMS short message service, which is a paging facility on a cell phone. You can type in a message from your Orange phone and send it to somebody else on another Orange phone, which is quite handy. At the end of this year, they're going to implement sending that message to any other pager anywhere in the UK. It also gives us facility to send the message as a fax. You fax it through to the, well, you send the message to a bureau, and that bureau then sends it on to any number in the world with a cover sheet. It is also, they hope by the end of next year, going to give the facility to send that message as an email message to any address in the world, and also as a voice message, where they will digitise the message for you, synthesise the voice, and send it to, again, any number in the world. They're also going to be selling a PCMCIA modem later on this year, which is going to allow data connections, again, at 9600. So that's quite nice. The only other thing really happening in the UK at the moment, it's fairly dead as it goes at the moment, because blue boxing died fairly recently in the UK, which has sort of cut off all access for the UK hackers and freakers. I guess they don't like paying phone bills, but again, who does? The only really good internet connections used to be in the US, so people used to just box the US and sit online morning, noon and night, which is fine with me. However, this has died now, so everything's fairly quiet in the UK. We hope they've changed international routing codes, so we hope to have those sorted out again fairly soon, which would be quite nice. But I don't think there's much else happening in the UK at the moment. We really need to get some more communication with the US going. Everything seems to be a lot more open in the US, and this helps. It doesn't really help with sort of hackers just in the UK just sit in the room and think, oh, what can I do next, and don't talk to one another, because nobody really learns anything that way. Does anybody have any questions you want to ask me about the UK? Yeah, sure. This is a good question. I went to the Hacking at the Indian Universe conference last year with a friend of mine from Scotland. And previously to that, I had been thinking of setting up a conference in the UK. I hadn't really had a lot of interest about it until Hacking at the Indian Universe happened. Then there was kind of more interest, then it sort of died off again. The problem we have is that the UK is obviously a small island. It does have a population of 58 million, but I mean, you could fit it into Texas 55 times. It's expensive to get to England as well, even from Europe. Just to come across in a car across on the ferry would cost you around $250, which is not altogether too cheap. They've just opened the Channel Tunnel, but that's not really a viable option. That's $500, just a return ticket on that. There'd be quite a lot of interest, I think, if we could get somewhere to hold it that's easy to get to. It has to be really in London, because, again, there is public transport in the UK, but it's not altogether too good. And London's expensive to hold a conference in. A room such as this just wouldn't exist anywhere in London. You'd have to probably hire at Olympia, which is, you're looking at £20,000 a day, minimum. So it's kind of hard to find somewhere to hold it that's reasonable. It's kind of hard to get people to come across to it from either US or UK or even, I mean, Europe. I'm going to investigate holding it again, possibly sometime next year. If anyone's interested in coming, anyone's interested in speaking, then come speak to me afterwards. I really do need to get some more interest in it. I don't think the government would have too much problem with it. They don't seem to make any distinction really between computer people and hackers too much at the moment. There hasn't been really too much grief. And the media, I'm sure, would love it. So, yeah. Sorry? Yeah, just dial in services, 192.28.8 probably. The current services allow, they're just a slip connection, and it allows, for $20 a month, it allows any amount of access. But obviously you've got your phone call charges on top of that, so I mean you could easily multiply that by 10 in a month. So it's not altogether cheap. Internet's really starting to take off in the UK. There's a program called the NET, which is a television program in the UK, which just finished running. It's promoting computers and networks. I don't think it really did too much of a good job. They're trying to really sweeten it and sugarcoat it for everybody. So they just tried to present it in a really, really fashionable way, and it just didn't come off. It was just laughed at by anyone who knew what they're talking about, and people that didn't know what they're talking about got bored and switched off. So, any other questions, Tom? Yeah. I'm sorry, I can't hear. Cable doesn't really exist too much in the UK. Again, it's only London and maybe Birmingham, which is towards the west of the UK. There are, let me think. I mean, in the UK, there's 4 television channels. Which is fairly limiting. Everything else is satellite. There's something about 3 million people subscribe to satellite. There are something about 30 million homes that get channels 1, 2, 3 and 4, so it's a fairly good monopoly. Cable exists mainly in London, as I say, but there's only something like about 20,000 people on cable. They are starting off phone services, and they reckon there's around 10,000 telephone lines installed by the cable operators. They are charging less than BT, British Telecom, but not a whole lot less. So it's not really taking off in any major way yet. We'll have to wait and see. It's going to take a fairly long time to cable up most of the UK. So, yeah. BT plans for what, sorry? Internet access from BT. As far as I know, they do have internet access available. I think they're really only really marketing it at corporations, though. It's fairly expensive. I don't really know what the charge rates are. And it's also fairly difficult to find somebody who knows what they're talking about to go and speak to you. I mean, you ring up their customer services and you ask them, like, okay, I'd like to speak to somebody about internet access, and they go, internet what? And they just basically deny the existence of anything. And you have to go find extensions and call around. It's just really hit and miss. As far as I know, they're not really promoting anything but corporations at the moment. The other thing that really surprises me is ISDN access in the UK. We have ISDN 2. It's the most advanced ISDN network in the world, apparently, which is what they keep saying to corporations. However, they're not marketing it to anybody but corporations. And they also until recently, they've made it almost impossible to get into. They were charging somewhere in the region around $2,000 to install the line, and then around $1,000 a month in rental. They did bring the prices down, and I know, well, Mark down here, also from the UK, you have an internet ISDN line now, and they have brought the prices down somewhat. So if anyone wants to know anything about that, go speak to him. Anything else anybody would like to know? Yeah. Right, yes, universities do have access to internet now. I've just finished university, and 4 years ago when I started, my university did not have internet link, did not have email, only had email on campus. That was disabled because they thought it was a waste of time. They consider it to be a waste of facilities, basically. In my final year, they did then implement internet access, however only email access. They also thought it was a good idea to allow external email but not allow email to come into the university, because they considered email coming into university would be a waste of their disk space. So it's sort of a weird way of looking at things. Telnet access and FTP access came online maybe 2 months before I left. They're saying they're going to limit that as well. You're not allowed to use IRC because, again, it's a waste of resources, so they're fairly tight on what you can and cannot do. And then again, it's only maybe 50% of universities that have access to the internet, so it's not widespread by any means. Yeah. Oh no, you can only get internet access if you have a course that requires you to use a computer. So it's mainly computer science majors, maybe maths. Anybody else has to apply for an account and they'll say no. So, which is not particularly nice, but that's the way it is. Any other questions, Tom? Yeah, there are. There are not too many of them though. There are two telephone networks in the UK. British Telecom is the main one, and they have fairly well a monopoly up until a few years back. Then Mercury came along, and they set up their own telephone network, and they started installing phone boxes and telephones, public telephones, a few years back now. They're trying to break up the duopoly as it is now a bit further. They've also given out licenses to a few other companies. The power network was privatized maybe a year and a half ago now. It was split into two, and one of them wants to run a network in UK, telephone network in UK. Also the British Rail would like to run a telephone network. I mean, they can't even run a rail network, so I don't know how they're going to run a telephone network. So, I'm just trying to think, there's maybe a couple of other people who want to run telephone networks. They're not going to be really set up for about maybe another 10 years at least until they're established. So at the moment, in 90% of it's BT, and you see BT pay phones wherever you go, and they have their coin phones and the card phones. You do see Copots every now and again, but then they tend to be on people's private lines, maybe in bars and pubs and hotels, but you won't see them on the street, they're just not allowed. So, any other questions about anything UK based? Okay, well, if there's anybody else to ask me, I'll be around, and if any support or anyone's interested in coming to a convention in the UK, come speak to me. Thanks very much.